Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I think what I really love about property and what sold it for me was tangibility of it. I think what I always wanted to do as a doctor was that, you know, you're helping people, you can see the outcomes of it. For property, it's the same.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tarun Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with Matt Koo, the Managing Director of ICD Property. You'll hear how he fell into property and development despite having dreams to be a doctor, how he developed his skills as a financier, and how he has been involved in multi-million dollar projects across Australia, and much, much more. We find out what Matt Koo's day-to-day role is, as well as the projects he's currently working on.
I'm the Managing Director at ICD Property. We're an Australian-based property development company. Australian-based, but we have projects across four states in Australia. There's three states in Australia. And four projects. We've got one in Geelong. It's not a different state, unfortunately. No, I shouldn't say that either. It's very close and very easy to access. We've got four projects across three states in Australia and also a project in Auckland, New Zealand. Our projects comprise largely mixed-use projects, three of which are CBD projects in Melbourne, Sydney and Adelaide. In Melbourne, we've got a close to 600 apartment tower going up on King Street in Melbourne CBD, and that's just starting construction now. We have a Sydney project, which is a land joint venture with the City Tattersalls Club. It's a 125-year-old, 125-year-old Tattersalls Club, big part of the community there, and a really centralised project. It sits on Pitt Street near Pitt Street Mall. You're from Sydney, so you understand pretty well. it's really exciting. We've achieved our stage one DA on that project, which sees us redeveloping the City Tassels Club, the commercial space at sort of the first few levels, and within the heritage frame fabric as well. And then above that, developing a boutique hotel, and then above that, a residential tower. So a really exciting project. Actually just commenced our design competition phase as of last week. So we'll soon have an architect assigned to it as well for the tower.
Due to the DA process being time-consuming and difficult in Sydney, Koo explains the process it took for this particular project.
I think my celebrations when we got a stage one DA probably says it all. We've had the project since 2014, and it's gone through a number of challenges and hurdles. We were knocked back in our first attempt to get the stage one DA. And then worked really closely with council to finally get there. But it wasn't a quick process.
Yes, I think I totally understand. Nothing's quick with council any day, any council even, to say the least.
Interestingly, during this challenging time with COVID and all, they've looked at how they can actually expedite processes and streamline. And we've seen, we've benefited from a bit of that already, especially through this stage two process. Usually you required physical models and all that, which aren't very practical the circumstances. So that's been able to shorten a bit of the time frame, and hopefully, you know, there's other areas which are questioned and challenged, and especially because we're wanting to build or bring a lot of stimulus to the economy. The construction industry and development industry is a big part of that. We're talking like 9-10% of GDP just directly through work sites. And then, you know, when you look at the flow on to other consultants and material suppliers and all that, you're looking at more like an impact of 40% of you know, the economy. And that's with, you know, looking at sort of mining materials, material suppliers, developers, agents. It is a really wide-spanning sort of impact.
Koo delves into what a typical day in his life looks like.
In my particular role, a lot of my focus is around business strategy, which is definitely ramping up a lot more as the climate and the uncertainty into the near and medium-term future. But it's also supporting, you know, with the large challenges for our delivery team. So in terms of assisting our development team with identifying big problems and challenges and hurdles, but also problem solving with them. Never like to take that autonomy and management of that away from them, but being really sort of a sounding board in dealing with those challenges. And we do that sort of as a leadership director group with our development teams, at least on a monthly basis, but more frequently as the large challenges arise. I'm also a big advocate of getting involved in things that you're passionate with. And for me, like I like to get quite involved in new acquisitions and partnering as well. So a lot of our projects, in fact, all of our projects are in some form a partnership. I mentioned before with the City Tassels Club in Sydney, that's a partnership with a long joint venture there. In Adelaide, I didn't get to speak about that before, but we're doing a PPP with the City of Adelaide there. And that's a redevelopment of a landmark project, Central Market Arcade. And doing it with them and with Nanshan, which is a large Chinese group based with aluminium manufacturing, but also has a really strategic sister-type relationship.
You mentioned the words or the sort of phrase PPP. What does that stand for people who don't know what that is?
Yeah, public-private partnership. So really working with government and to develop critical community infrastructure, but with a sort of a private aspect to it.
Before delving into his property journey, Koo shares a bit about his upbringing.
Born and bred in Melbourne, so haven't moved too far from that. Look, I've definitely toyed with the idea of going overseas and working there, and traveled a fair bit overseas. But, you know, there's a good reason why we, as a number of our cities, often get in the top 10 of most livable and most recognised cities. So, that's mine. I went to school here as well. Went to a local school, Scots College, for high school, and then studied at Melbourne University. So really haven't ventured too far.
He reflects on his time at Melbourne University and talks about his field of study.
Yeah, I studied a Bachelor of Property and Construction, which they don't have the bachelor system now. They've moved to an undergrad system, so a bit older. Bachelor of Property Construction and Commerce, and then later on I came back to study my Master of Applied Finance.
He goes on to share whether he gained first-hand experience before returning to university to complete his master's.
As part of the property and construction course, a requirement was actually to get industry experience before you graduated, and that was really, really really insightful gave me a lot of understanding about the practical elements of my course while studying it. So I actually worked at Jones Lang LaSalle in the research and consulting division that really helped to understand the sort of macro elements that impact the property industry, as well as understanding, because all of our clients were investors and developers, what they really cared about.
Ku explains the job description he fell under for this kind of position and how he was hired.
It was a kind of a mix. I was very fortunate to get a full-time role there, so I got a lot of experience and then kind of moved my final 2 years of my studies into part-time. So I found that to be really valuable. They treated me as a full-time, I guess, in the first year as a graduate, essentially.
And how long were you there for?
I think it was about 3 years in total.
He delves into the kind of experience he gained from working in a large development company.
It was a phenomenal base to start with, because it wasn't a specific transactional role, in that, you know, if you're doing leasing and property management or something, you learn a lot about that particular part of the property. But working in research, and in particular the consulting part, you have specific or tailored investment and development questions that want to be answered. And they stem from everything around the macro and microeconomics of property, the fundamentals that drive property investment development decisions, all the way through to like actually doing feasibilities and understanding, what values are and how to make decisions from that. So it really gave me a great appreciation and understanding of the real world decisions in property investment and development.
He looks back on the kind of projects he worked on during this period of time.
One that was really interesting, it didn't actually end up going ahead because GFC, that was the time when I was working there. And it was actually a Dubai group that was exploring what now is Melbourne Quarter, that there's a large development, sort of sits on the edge of Melbourne CBD and Docklands. And they had this grand vision of essentially doing a tallest tower in Melbourne, and comprising of all luxury sectors of residential and retail and commercial and hotel. And being able to then explore the study of luxury residential. And back then, there wasn't much apartment development, even in the CBD, to consider. So when you're doing a study, you're generally trying to benchmark other examples. That's your sort of way of knowing, is it feasible? It's like a valuer would look at other properties to see, does this stack up to what value? And it was really interesting because there wasn't much around in Melbourne, so you kind of have to look globally and look at what best practice is and take a view then of how Melbourne could evolve. 10 years down the track with, Sydney and Melbourne, you're seeing a lot of residential development in the CBD. More and more the apartments are becoming bigger and you're seeing people accept luxury living and family living in the CBD close to amenity. It's really interesting to see how that practice has evolved.
Coming up after a break, we hear what Matt Ku did after his time with JLL.
I actually was made redundant. That was how I left. another thing that I reflect on is the positives. The reason I mention it is it's a very uncertain time for a lot of people right now. People are losing their jobs, and it's really challenging. I think it's important to know that, you know, there are positives.
How he was able to jump into a large development of 350 units.
So that particular project, the family that I work for, the Mai family, they do have a substantial amount of wealth. I don't think myself, you know, personally be able to do a large project like that. It is very capital intensive, and you do have to put a lot of that up front. And so, you know, we did have that backing behind us. You know, there was a lot of milestones along the way that needed to be achieved.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Shum, and you're listening to Property Investory. Koo reflects on what inspired him to jump into property development and construction studies.
To be honest, I can't say that my parents had any influence in my endeavors in the property, and my endeavors in property were probably even a little haphazard. And I'll explain all that. So my parents, my dad has always been investing in shares, not so much on the property space. They only property they've ever owned is their house. And so I never really was exposed too much to property investment from an early age. And funnily enough, like in high school, I actually, I always wanted to study medicine and become a doctor. I got to year 12, didn't get the grades to get into medicine. And so I didn't really have a backup option, to be honest. I kind of was like, oh, that's what I've always wanted to do, and now I don't know what to do. And so I kind of went at it quite logically and thought, well, I've got decent grades and I could probably do a double degree, and commerce and business sounds like, you know, the obvious choice. And what should I marry that with? Because, you know, I don't want to waste my grades. I should probably do a double degree. That's from my parents. That's a very Asian mentality. I looked at all the options available to me, and came to property and construction, and I was like, well, I get that. It's tangible. It makes sense. I can see like how I've utilized it. And I think probably the thing that, you know, sold it for me was, I was looking at the Forbes 100, there's a BRW 100 rich list, and realized 75% of those people made their money through property. I thought, well, can't go too wrong if that, you know. And so I'm not saying that's the way you should pick your future careers and university courses. Definitely don't advocate. I'm not an advocate for that. But I think, you know, as haphazard as it was, when I got to uni, I realized I actually was really interested and really passionate about property. And I think that's how you should probably choose your university courses. Do something that you're passionate about. I think what I really love about property and what sold it for me was that tangibility of it. I think what I always wanted to do as a being to be a doctor was that, you know, you're helping people, you can see the outcomes of it. And for property, it's the same. Like, you turn something from something to make it better. Better, like, you know, obviously my mindset but then was about making money, but actually, you know, better is about how you influencing, how you're impacting the community and those around.
He reflects on how his life would have been different if he had studied medicine and became a doctor.
It's funny because outside of my work at ICD, I do some personal developments, developments are quite capital intensive. So I actually do those with a couple friends from university and from high school. Both of them are dentists. So I guess you don't necessarily need to have studied property or even be working in the field to get into it. What is very handy is in the medical field, so for those who are practitioners, they're very favorable terms with financiers. You can borrow up to 90%. That's very handy, you know, and having good cash flow is important.
Koo goes on to share where he went to after his time at JLL.
I actually was made redundant. That was how I left. but, you know, another thing that I reflect on is the positives. The reason I mention it is it's a very uncertain time for a lot of people right now. People are losing their jobs, and it's really challenging. I think it's important to know that, you know, there are positives. You've got to have a positive mindset to approach every challenge. The redundancy gave me an opportunity to reflect on where I was at that time. What I really wanted to gain greater knowledge in was actually finance. I felt I had a lot of understanding about macroeconomics and how to look at the fundamentals of property and how they influence specific assets and developments. But actually going through a development needed a great understanding of finance. I went back and studied, and I was fortunate enough to get a job with a bank as well at the time, and navigated my way and eventually got into the property development and investment lending space within the bank.
He explains how long this journey was before he started working for ICD Property.
I think in total about probably 6 to 7 years all up. And then how I actually got into ICD was, so ICD Property has been set up by an old school friend of mine and his family, the Mai family. And, you know, we would catch up when I was working at ANZ in their property division there. And he wanted to understand how to navigate and approach finances for ICD's first development project in Collingwood. And I wanted to understand more from him, like how they would go about purchasing sites and developing them. So we had a win-win relationship, mutual relationship there, and beneficial relationship. And one day he called me up and asked me about a particular site in Melbourne CBD and how he would go and approach it from a financier's perspective. And so I sort of explained it, and Michael then said, look, like, I actually want you to come over and develop this for me. And that's where, that was my opportunity. But at the same time, I'd never actively managed a development before. So I was in my own sort of words. I said no to Michael in different language. more because I was like, look, I really care about you. I care about your company. I don't want to come and make a mess of it. But this is something that Michael has instilled in me is like, you got to have a lot of faith in people and their capabilities. And if you do that, like, it's self-fulfilling in a sense. And so he had a lot of trust, a lot of faith in me. He said, look, I think, what you know in your experience as a consultant to developers and investors and as a financier as well, taking all that skill and knowledge, you can apply it to development management. And he was really right. Like that having that sort of framework, a structure to approach things. It was surprising that, that was really, really efficient and useful way of developing or managing a project. So that project ended up being an extremely successful one for us. It was the EQ Tower project in Melbourne CBD, 633 apartments, so $350 million project, and it won multiple awards. We managed to secure an institutional joint venture partner out of China. It was their first international project. So yeah, like from many angles, it was a huge success, both for the company and for myself personally.
As the successful managing director was dealing with a hefty amount of money for this development project, he goes on to talk about the extensive process of putting the deal together.
So that particular project, the family that I work for, the Mai family, they do have a substantial amount of wealth. I don't think myself, you know, personally would be able to do a large project like that. It is very capital intensive, and you do have to put a lot of that up front. And so, you know, we did have that backing behind us. You know, there was a lot of milestones along the way that needed to be achieved. One thing that you know, was important for us was the terms in which we secured the project, the site. So we had 18-month settlement terms that enabled us to, you know, secure our DA in that time frame. And in Melbourne at that time, we were able to secure that in 5 months. So that was a really quick process, and really helped achieve all the other outcomes. So we're able to secure a builder, finance from a local bank as well for all the debt, and our joint venture partner, as well as sell out all the apartments before we even started construction. So the day we settled, we pretty much started construction. So 18 months.
He talks more about the joint venture partner with a Chinese company and how much they invested in the project.
Yeah, I guess breaking it down to the capital stack, you know, you have your equity component, which ICD and this joint venture partner contributed. And, you know, thinking about it, that was, you know, roughly 30% of the total build cost. And then the financier, the bank, the senior lender in that instance provided the remaining 70%. But the split was roughly a 50-50 between us and the joint venture partner.
Is that where your expertise working in the finance industry was able to help you contribute towards putting this deal together?
Definitely from, from structuring the deal with the joint venture partner, as well as knowing how to approach the bank to make sure we had all the information right and the project at the right stage to achieve the finance, because it wasn't, obviously it was a very, you know, large amount of debt. Certain things like ensuring that all of our pre-sales, or firstly our design was correct. Banks don't usually support below 40 or 50 square meter apartments, so making sure that apartments were structured that way with good natural light and all the other things that are important from a financier's perspective, making sure that, you know, the sales rates were within market range, making sure that we had also got a good mix between local and overseas buyers as well, that we, you know, contracted with a tier one builder, and that we as ourselves and our joint venture partner were considered a strong sponsor. So, you know, all those things are key to what a financier is going to look at. You know, sponsor, builder, the end sale, the structuring it all like that. And I think that's where I was able to bring that skill set from being on the financier's side to know exactly what they would consider important.
Ku shares where he mainly learned these finance skills that he has developed over time.
Theoretically, you do learn bits and pieces of it at university. Practice makes, you know, perfect. And I think I definitely learned 95% of it through work experience, both in terms of the feasibilities and expectations on returns from when I was at JLL, but in terms of the more detailed understanding of how to assess a good project. How to de-risk it and all that was through finance and through working at ANZ.
Inspired by Matt Koo's journey, we'll keep the conversation going in a future episode of Property Investory, where we'll hear about the first property he purchased.
The first property was the apartment which my wife and I purchased when we got married. The thinking about it was we want something that with all the amenities around it that we would use, and also one that we could possibly see as an investment long term once we move out into our sort of family home.
The worst investing moment he has experienced with development.
A big risk for a lot of smaller developments, there's actually a risk for any development, is around the builder. We've actually had a builder fall over on one of our projects, and we're still completing that project now, probably a year after we would like to have completed it. That has, you know, a real material impact on your outcomes.
And that's next time in a future episode of Property Investory.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.